There are pretenders among us, people who have mastered the ability to hide their pain, failures, struggles, and inadequacies in life. People who have the ability to mask their imperfections through material wealth and careers. In the last 20 years, social media has exploded and incubated these pretenders to grow in number and attitude. But one day in 2016, one of these pretenders broke away. This is his story. Hi and welcome to the show. My name is Jay and this is the Pretender Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to listen to the latest episode of the Pretender Podcast on the AfriPods network right here in Africa. You can also listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast network of your choice. This is part two with my good friend Pete. We continue where we left off, talking about his experience switching to a plant-based diet. He talks about permaculture and homeschooling. We even digressed a bit more into parenting and how this podcast came into being. This is a continuation of the last podcast recording, and once again, I do apologize for the audio quality in these first two parts, but the content is legit and I hope you too can enjoy it.
When you talk about having a plant-based diet and the challenges of what we have now, because previously, a few years ago, it wasn't something that was out in the public domain, and now it's being pushed, especially when you talk about veganism, you know, like it's a marketing tool, and it's also being tied to people being healthy, which is true, but it's moved on into something else.
It's hard to say. It's like I said earlier, I encourage everyone to try it. It may work for you, it may not work for you. There will be some marginal benefit to your health, I'm sure. But long-term benefits, who knows? You might even get sick. It may not work for you. We live in the age. I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole. You have abundance of information around you.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to go to library to dig it out.
Yeah.
Everything is in the palm of your hand on your smartphone.
Right.
So if you keep an open mind and seek the information and seek the answers, if you don't find it, you will most likely attract it in a different way. Mm-hmm. And eventually you will stumble. Again, I will add to the original question of yours about move to Africa. Once I went hardcore vegan, cold turkey vegan, I really got a lot of clarity of thought. It's like my mind cleared up. There was no more fog. I was able to process things differently, and that sort of got me. So without being able to sort of kick the quote unquote Western diet to the curb, I don't think that the move to Africa without this seemingly small component, I don't think the move would have been possible. I hope that makes sense, but a lot of things I'm still trying to figure out. A lot of things don't make sense to me, or I don't know. But the gut feeling is all right. It feels right. So I go with it.
Okay.
Bit by bit, I've added some milk in my coffee or milk in my tea. I'm not crazy about eggs, so occasionally we might have some eggs. Cheese, I might have some cheese, vegetarian pizza once in a while. My wife is more into eating fish. I'm not really.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not really out there looking for it. If wifey brings it home and she cooks it, I'll eat it. But if we don't have it for 2 or 3 weeks,
yeah,
I'm perfectly fine. If it's an avocado season, I can survive on 2, 3, 4 avocados a day, and I'm perfectly fine. Just like with anything else, eventually you will plateau and you won't see much of an improvement. So then you start to question. And I think that's where a lot of people go back to their original ways.
Yeah.
So who knows? I think there's still a lot of things we need to figure out, but one of the things I often talk about, like, there's so many aspects of your life that you can't control.
Right.
Whether it's going to rain, or whether the interest rates are going to up or down, or if there's going to be a change of government, or whatever restrictions may be put on us or whatnot, you can't control any of that. What can you control? You can really control what you put inside your body,
right?
And you can really control your physical fitness. So when we were in the dumps and we were at our lowest point, and I often told you, bro, just stick with this, just try to control what you can control. So being fit and being healthy really contributes to the point of where you can really wake up in the morning and be there fresh and ready to raise these young boys, because yes, they are really demanding. Respect to all the women that raise their kids on their own.
Amen.
And if they have 2, 3, 4 of them, yeah, just one, it's a full-time job.
100%.
It's a full-time job. So if you can control and be as prepared as possible, you know, mentally you might be up and down once in a while, but if you are physically prepared, it's easier to sort of for the lack of a better word, to fake the mental when the mental is not at the highest. Yeah. So sometimes you have to fake it to make it, because young kids, they don't understand the concept of you being depressed or not feeling upbeat in a particular day, or you may have an argument with your wife, or you had some bad news from your family, or something happened. Kids don't care about that. They want to have their fun, they want to have their companion there, physically and mentally present. So again, there's a lot of, in my opinion, there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle.
Love that, and that's hard. And you can't sugarcoat it. It's hard work, and even just deciding to change that is hard. But what is even harder, especially these days, is growing what you eat. And I really want to hear from, because this is one thing that we have adopted over the years, and thanks to you, like, I had an innate desire and love to grow food, but when I met you, I had a new dimension that I had never really thought about. And this is something that was there traditionally in Africa. The re-education to understand that you could grow food in ways that are different and much more sustainable in terms of organic farming and regenerative farming. How did you come to that? Is this related to when you changed to a plant-based diet, or is something that you meant differently?
I came across permaculture in Australia, because the concept has been but no, permaculture is very popular in Australia, so I started doing a lot of research on it, watching a lot of videos, and it made a lot of sense to me. Growing up, both of my grandmas had gardens and had small livestock. It was a nice way to interact with your grandparents in the garden. It was a completely different environment compared to confinement of the four walls. So once the vegan sort of transition kicked in, and again I got that clarity of the mind, when I decided to quit my work, I told my wife that I really need to go do this permaculture course. So we did a permaculture course at Jeff Lawton's Zaytuna Farm in northern New South Wales. And it was plain and simple for us to see that if we want to be somewhat self-sufficient or independent in our life, there has to be a component where you grow some of your food, whether it's fruit, vegetables, or raising livestock. So one of the reasons, again, to add to your original question, was to once we moved to Africa to start a small farm, to really try to experiment and practice and learn more of this. So when we met, I was already doing it a bit. Started a vegetable garden and mulching and composting, adding to it bit by bit, where eventually we rented a farm that was sort of plug and play, ready to implement all these things on a somewhat larger scale. As you know, we had another farm site that we purchased previously, but yeah. Due to the couple of years of hardship that we experienced, we couldn't really put enough focus, emphasis, or allocate resources to fully developing it. So when we were finally able to do it, it was a great feeling to see it in practice and to really experience it and to have that extra level of conviction.
Yeah.
To know that it's really possible. It's not that complicated. It just requires a little bit of effort, a little bit of time allocation, and once again, it works perfectly with raising your kids. If you're homeschooling your kids, it's a perfect activity to keep the kids involved, to interact, to ask abundance of questions.
Yeah,
there's never a dull moment out in the garden or out on the farm.
Right.
So it sort of fits perfectly into our priorities, to put it simply.
Yeah. And really, you can introduce them to the concept of working. They have to earn their living in a way and grow their own food, but it's out of work. You have to put in some labor, and you can give them a few small tasks, and they're enjoying it, you know. And when it comes to like growing your own food, it's just something about being able to eat something that's coming from your own work, your own labor, your own backyard, your own farm, that gives you this confidence, you know, and there's a self-sufficiency there, but it's just, you know what you're putting inside your body, going back to what we talked about earlier, and you know exactly how you're growing it, and it adds value and to the quality of life, because ultimately, permaculture or regenerative or growing your own food is about the quality of life. And the quality of life adds into all these pieces we talked about, like deciding what you put inside your body, deciding to what level of availability you give to your own children, and having a clarity of mind in the things that you do. It's all about the quality of life. How has that been in terms of really finding that quality of life through farming and sustainable farming?
I can't really. I'm quite analytical person. I overanalyze everything and every aspect out there. And sometimes I just give up, because with the amount of information that you have, it still doesn't make sense to you. The way certain things work, but I can't find any fault in growing your food or raising the livestock in a organic way or regenerative way or permaculture label way, whatever you want, whatever label you want to stamp on it. It makes perfect sense to me. That's basically bottom line, and that's my goal in life to put it plainly. I feel like I found a higher purpose. It's a very good conversation starter.
Yeah.
It's like you can say people have lost their touch with nature, and everyone, whether they aware of it or unconsciously, everyone is sort of attracted to that point of origin, if I could call it that. So we were on a small farm in Lusaka previously, growing organic vegetables and raising pastured pigs, free-range pigs. Even though I don't eat meat, you can't really have a functional farm without animal manure that can be turned into quality compost and can be used to grow your produce, vegetable produce. It's one loop now that we relocated to Solvezi. We are developing a new farm from the scratch. So free-range pigs, free-range chickens, highly likely sheep will be something that will be implemented in the near future. Of course, seasonal crops, growing our vegetables, and planting a lot of fruit trees, which supplement the animal production, and our son loves it. When we moved to Solvezi from Lusaka, he was miserable for about 3-4 months, crying, asking me, "Daddy, please take me back to my farm." The dog was going crazy. She escaped about 4, 5, 6 times, not being used to the confined of, environment of a suburbia. So, but we are back on track now, and it's a nice process. It's a nice process. Once again, shout out to wifey. It's something that she didn't need much conviction on. It makes perfect sense to her as well. We lived on the farm before. She loves that lifestyle. body provides. So I don't see any way where we can where our train can be derailed from these tracks.
For sure, I like the point about the process because it is a process, and along the way there's been challenges. And it's hard starting over, but within that is an aspect of progression. You know, every single time you start over, because people shouldn't take it lightly. Moving on from one city to another is hard. And moving a farm from one city to another is almost nearly impossible. So you're starting over. You have to start over with different terms. In terms of the land is different, the climate is slightly different, navigate around different people, different ways of getting things, moving from while it was in the outskirts of the city. Could at least have access to stuff within Osaka or the city to the farm. But when you move to the far northwest, then there's a bit of logistics and all that. And it takes a certain level of determination, resilience, and mental fortitude. And again, the unity within the family, starting with the spouse, to be able to start over. It's something that you would point to that has really spurred you on in terms of being able to be ready to start over. Because, I mean, starting over is a challenging process, but when you get to a point where, oh, I've done this before and I have to do it again, like, for an average Joe and a person starting, because we are average Joes, you know. So how would you speak to that in terms of just starting over something that you've done for different sorts of reasons?
Brother Jay, I don't know if I'm just stupid, naive, or just too optimistic, but it's the only thing that makes sense to me. I can't see myself going back to 9 to 5, so I'd rather break my back again, building something from the scratch, and see the labor of my work, see the stewardship or the practice of these principles that we believe in come to fruition. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of patience. It takes not that much conviction, because from my point of view, it's plain to see.
Yeah.
So for me, it's sort of a lifetime goal to get this up and running. You are familiar with my business plan and with all the things I want to implement on the farm eventually. Just the short experience of running the farm previously, on a good day, having even 2-3 visitors, taking them through and showing them something that should be fairly self-explanatory, but somehow we just stopped practicing these things would be a norm 100 years ago. Because 100 years ago, we didn't really have that many fertilizers and chemicals, and we couldn't really enforce our way on the nature as we do now. So we worked with the nature way more. Our ancestors had it all figured out. So somehow along the way, we became too smart with all these technologies and all these distractions and all these comforts in life, and we forgot
further out from the suburbs, from the city, and this means that you always cannot get to places or in the city that you would get to, especially like if you're to go to school drop-offs, where it's get stuff, you have to drive a long way out and all that. This means that you have to consider a lot of options in all the things that you do. If you're getting your stuff, grocery stuff that you need on the farm, it means you get them long in advance for a period you want to get to go to the city, you want to go into the outskirts, and you plan your life around that. And for me, that meant like planning for the future in terms of we won't be able to take the kids to school every day and pick them up. So how do we give our children an education? And the underlying point there is an education in a way that we could sustainably do it and afford it. And I mean, the things that we talked about early on when we met and in our downtown, like how we're going to provide an education to our kids. And we talked about the idea of homeschooling. And we explored the different options of homeschooling and what it was like. And we ended up being serious about it. And obviously now I'm homeschooling my son, and he did it for a bit. It relates to a lot of the stuff we've been talking about, because homeschooling is hard. Very different to what everyone else is doing. It's a, dare I say, a very strange topic. Like, people are not very familiar with homeschooling. I mean, these days it's a word thrown around because there's school going on the internet. Because of the pandemic, people can get through their online school and carry on working when the schools are closed. But is it really a far-fetched idea?
I feel like I'm not equally equipped to speak on this topic as you are. So I'll just say my bit, and then you can expand on it, because you're the champion. I did basic homeschooling with our son. But I'm not as serious about education as you are. I'm more of a play and work and play and have fun and free range sort of father, which I think is okay, because when the child is 5 years old, why in my opinion, why force all these things on the little creature? He can always pick it up when he's 7 or 8.
Exactly.
So that's just my opinion. So we took it, we did download certain homeschooling programs. We followed it to a certain degree. Our son went to a homeschool sort of setup for a few months before the pandemic hit us, and one day he turned around and he told me, "Daddy, I want to go to school." So I'm looking at him like, "Okay, why?" "I want to have more friends." I'm like, "Fair enough, buddy. It's your life. If you want to go to school, we'll put you to school." He made the decision. We rolled with it. He goes to school now, and the important part to me is he's got a big smile on his face when he's getting on the bus. He's got a big smile on his face when he's getting off the bus.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to question what they're teaching today or whatever. As long as he's happy, as long as he's smiling, I'm happy to roll with it. But once again, if he makes a decision of going back to homeschooling, I'm ready. But Jay's been seriously homeschooling his his son is he's a champion at it. He puts, in my opinion, he put more, way more emphasis on education than I do. And please go into it, because you really live it. I know you spend a lot of time preparing. Spend a lot of resources on it. So
yeah. So my whole life, I think, at this point, is wrapped out around the homeschool program. And I like what you said about the kids playing and all that, because actually, as I got to learn through this homeschool, because it's a journey, right? Like, you get to learn stuff as you're hoping your child can learn, but I realized, like, the kids learn as they play. So the emphasis was so little on the academic stuff, but for them to play, because they actually learn through play. And I think for me, having been on the past train of raising a child, being there for it, just added more time that we spent together. But one thing I know, homeschooling is hard work. It's a full-time job. It's not something that you're going to do half-heartedly. If you're not ready to do it, put your child in school. If they're ready for it, also they need to be ready to go into school. You just don't put your child in school because you can't get a nanny to look after them, because then you're not doing it for the right reasons. They need to be ready to be in school. It's hard work. And they're full-time job. You can't do it half-heartedly. You can't say, okay, I'll do it this day and not do it the other day. It's 100%. You're going to ruin the child and ruin your relationship. So, just like things we've been talking about, whether it's taking a leap of faith in your diet, taking a leap of faith in starting a new thing, leaving your work, it's something that you have to be fully prepared, body, mind, and soul, and you have to prepare. And for some, that's their part, for others, it won't work. And for me and my family, I think that works, and it fits into the vision and plan that we hope to go to. My son loves it 100%, and we hope to do the same for our daughter when she's of age. And I sort of arrange my whole life, whether it's my work or something I need to do. Homeschool comes first, then my other life. But just like parenting, that's exactly how it works. So when it comes to homeschooling, it's a strange idea to many people, but educate yourself again. Like, you need to do your research. It's not just something that I jumped into. We talked about this for like 3-4 years and did our research. I've done several trainings around that before I actually started, and I would encourage people to do it. And like everything else, take interest in your child. When they play, whatever they do, when they learn, it's not getting them to pass a result or get a high mark. It's them learning to cope in this world we're living in. But the most important thing is that they grow to be children who, men or women who can decide what their future is. But we're just part of the process, facilitating it. And basically, that's it. I wouldn't want to go into a full course of schooling. But yeah, do you see it as something that you would do in the future?
As I said, if one day he comes out and say, I don't want to go to school anymore, we'll have that discussion, because at the end of the day, it's a privilege for me to be there in his life. So we will give it a serious consideration. Yeah. We won't just brush it off as something that he's just saying, you're going to school tomorrow. Just like when he said, I want to go to school, if he comes out and turns around, no, I don't want to go to school anymore, we'll ask him questions, we'll sit down, we'll try to see if it's real or if there's just something bothering him.
Yeah.
We won't brush it all under the rug.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to homeschool my child. So that's why the conversation will be had.
Yeah, you'll certainly be pulling a few hairs.
Yeah.
Well, it's something that for you I don't need to add any encouragement.
But as Jay said, it's extremely serious undertaking to homeschool your child. It's not child's play.
It's
respect to the teachers out there.
Yeah.
They do this every day with a class of 30.
Right, 30. Like I can do one. Like one.
It's the attention span.
Right.
The tricks they try to
play
on you.
Discipline.
And you have to navigate a very thin line to not damage the relationship of you being an authority.
Right.
Or just a play buddy. You constantly have to navigate those two.
And then there's school rules, there's parents, there's... Because for them it's work as well. And then it's 30 children. Like one child... It's a lot of work. Like I have like 4 hours to prepare a day before, right after school, and I still have to be a parent, I still have to prepare. And then just one thing before like I lose this thought. Homeschooling has nothing to do with you as a parent becoming a teacher. You're always going to be the parent when your child is in that learning room helping them learn in the learning center or whatever that is. You're going to always be daddy. You're not going to be Mr. So-and-so. And now,
Papa,
Papa in our case, right? So it doesn't change. And a lot of people ask me this question, like, so now does he have to call you sir or teacher or what? No. I'm still going to be Papa in there. I'm still going to be Papa. And learning happens in every corner of our yard. House, it never stops. It's just being more aware of it and guiding them. And these kids are smarter than us. We dumb
without
them down.
We dumb them down. 100%.
So they don't need your help much. The academic stuff is the easy part. It's just for them to get more coordinated and all that. So, but for you as a parent, whether you're the mom or the dad, parent that you like, you need a lot of mental preparation. With all the challenges around, you still have to do the right mind, right attitude.
With discussing homeschooling, I consider myself about maybe 2 out of 10 because I'm more of a free range type of approach. I don't feel like I can't sort of process it in my head to justify forcing this 5-year-old child to learn this if he doesn't really want to. I'm curious where you see yourself on the scale from 1 to 10 because you are on a significantly higher level of homeschooling compared to what I did. Because I look at it from the angle. I can't put a premium or I can't put a value on an experience where I walk into the field and I find my son in the cage playing with the newborn piglets, or I find him chasing chickens or catching birds or picking eggs on his own and naming all the chickens and watching their interactions and reporting to me that this chicken, this name and that name, they were fighting and whatnot. I sort of, from that free range mindset of mine, I sort of enjoy it more when it's free flowing rather than structured homeschooling. Which is, I think, the root of my failure of a homeschool educator. So I'm really curious to see where you. I know you still appreciate and enjoy all these experiences, but where do you see yourself on the scale from 1 to 10?
I'm quite conservative when it comes to that. I would say a 5.
Five is a cop out answer. 5 is a, it's you that's in the middle. You can't.
Yeah, because I said 5 because I discovered really early and quickly that the homeschool program was very little to do with just, okay, is math you're going to learn this? It's like two things. It's the character of the child, like preparation for learning, so to speak, especially that when you start homeschooling at an early age. Kindergarten to preschool is preparing them to learn concepts of life. Like, for example, they understand what gravity is, but not from a textbook perspective. They know something will fall, and if you throw something up, it will fall. And really, you're not going to explain why it's falling per se, because you're just sort of giving a label to it. That's what it's happening in school. So if something, you throw something up, it's heavy, it will fall, then you call it gravity in school. Sort of. So they already know that. So you're not teaching them that something will fall, but you are kind of preparing them to learn, to navigate some of the things in the real world. But there was very little to do with the actual academic stuff. And again, there is very little, but you're just giving them, preparing them to learn. I found it more about me learning to be a parent and identifying things that I was not aware about. Because I find my child chasing chickens, playing with a dog, and they love that. But I don't really understand what their strengths are in helping. Like, originally, my idea of homeschooling before I knew all this thing was about understanding the gifts of my child, so that early on, as early as I can understand what he's good at and what he loves doing, and hopefully he loves basketball. not very many good signs about that.
So, zero. So
that was the original idea of
freezing
it. But when I started to learn about it, it had very little to do with. In fact, the whole curriculum makes academics, or so to speak, the easy part of the program, because by hook or by crook, we learn these things. And we learn the things that are important to us, and those are the things we retain, at least for my level of education that I went to from school. And there's a lot of things that I discarded that I don't use. But if I'm forced to do it, and learn it, I will be able to take it out. So people learn. That's why people are able to. There's such a power. A human being is such a powerful, intelligent being that they can adapt. The power to adapt has so been understated, and I think that's part of the reason we have so many problems in the world, and we're not going to go into that. But learning is an innate value in us, so we just incorporate it. So again, I go back to, I am a 5 because I still have a lot to learn in parenting. But I was able to see that matters the most is the structure you're referring to had much to do with putting a child in a place where learning can happen in a formal way, aside from the learning that happens in a unstructured way, in preparation for later stages in their life when they need to sit down and focus on something. That's what the structure is about. It's not about you in school you will be doing this, so you're going to do this here. It's more about there's some time in their lives when they'll need to focus on something. Be it family, be it whatever they want to do in life, but have that structure in life, because part of the children growing up is just have structure and security around it. So the structure is just for them to start to learn, to grow their attention span, to develop that time. This is my space when I want to focus on a quiet time, because quiet time is good for children. You see it in naps, you see it in when they just sit at some point, it's just quiet. It's important, like all of us in the region. But then you start to give them structure and understanding time, and understanding all these things that how they can use them. And along the way, the concept starts to come out, concepts that they already understand. They count petals from flowers without you teaching them. You know, now how can you attach meaning to numbers? You know, those concepts are slowly introduced. So that's why I say I'm a five.
Still a compound answer.
Five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Let me ask you a question, because from my experience before my son went to school, without a fail, you get this question. And so let me be devil's advocate. What about social interactions with other kids?
Okay, so everything that our children learn, let me say from this perspective, our children are seen monkey do, and they follow the same routine. So they do exactly what we do. Now, social interactions are not necessarily learned at school, but they're learned from the home. So we teach our children how to relate to us early on, how to relate to a visitor or an older person when they come into our home, without actually leaving the confines of our home. We teach our children how to relate to older people that are older than their own parents, like grandparents and all those things. It's how they relate to them. And this helps them when they go out to the world. That's where they're innocent souls, right? They'll relate based on what they're taught. And in a social setting, like, when I go out and I meet somebody, I have a way that I am taught to relate to them. But how they relate to me may spur a reaction, right? So, but my founded way to respond to them was taught from the home. It's not the person out there teaching me. And I give an example of myself. I'm still an introvert, so to speak. I went into school an introvert. I came out of school an introvert, you know what I mean? And to relate your question to something someone recently asked me is, how would a child that's homeschooled be able to compete in a world that's, you know, that's aggressive, so to speak? It's ring of the neck kind of a thing, like they have to fight for every position and all that. And I said to
them, which is a fair question.
It is a very fair question. But I said to them, the child or person should be motivated to succeed, not by being able to beat another person, but because that's important to them. You know what I mean, right? Like, do you get a job because you are qualified and able to do it, or do you get it by necessarily looking at your neighbor and saying, okay, that's what my neighbor is doing and I'm going to be better than them? No, it's motivation. You dangle the carrot, and that's what homeschooling is about. You dangle the carrot. What motivates your child to succeed? And it should be within self-motivation. It shouldn't matter what the other person is doing, but this is what I want. Not to beat them. But the world that is out there, the world of competition, is about teaching our children that you compete for no reason at all. You have to compete to be better. If someone is better than you, you have to try to be better than them. So it's not really an innate desire, it's survival, so to speak. It's not motivation, it's survival. So I think socializing and relating to people is something that we teach from the home. We teach our children how to relate to other persons, how to relate to authority, you know, and part of the homeschool curriculum is they have to understand how the nation, the country they live in, is set up with the government and all that. You teach them from there because they're going to live in that world. But you're also not taking away their freedom to think on their own. There's authority by nature in the home. The father and the mother make the decision, and that almost reflects the unit in the government, you know, like the country that they live, their rules that they need for it, just like their rules in the house. And by the time they go out to that world, they are prepared, you know. The only thing that we're doing in our homeschool setup is preparing their child. And whether it's relating to people, whether it's relating to rules, and then understanding that the whole curriculum, I mean, it's a whole program that you have to understand. You have to go through the material to see it and see how children get time to play and they interact with their peers without any of our homework. So I hope that kind of...
No, got it. Well, good answer. I also want to ask, more from the angle of interaction with his age mates, because once again, every single interaction I had with the new people I meet, with the friends, people ask you, which school does your son go to? And then you say, no, we homeschool. My mom would be on my case because she can't comprehend the concept of homeschooling. She'd be like, no, but where does he play with his friends or with his age mates? So she doesn't take it for an answer when I told her that no, there's dozens of kids around, and he plays with them outside. So from that angle, what about the interaction with his age mates?
Yeah, like. How do you teach a two-year-old what they should say or do with another two-year-old? Like, okay, now you're going to play with your friend. This is how you should behave towards them. Like, you can't do that. There's, within us, we are not created to be like lone people. Like, we are people... You're social creatures.
Yes.
So there's an innate desire to connect. And that's why kids will not be able to talk. They're so small, but they find a common thing. You don't even teach that. However, the relation that I talked about earlier is referring to, as they're growing, as they're having that self-awareness, and self-awareness comes with some selfishness. That's why a child thinks they are in charge for a certain period. That's you are raising them in your home, they think they can get whatever they want. You don't just go get what you want, you have to ask. You teach that in their home, in relation to you, so that the child knows how to relate to another person. So with kids, you do your homework when you can at a certain stage when they are growing, but some of it you can't even teach. Kids know how to relate. Once they reach their peers and you... They're playing with their peers. It's just a connection. You can't. It's like, however, as they get older, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they're self-aware, you need to teach them manners. Manners in the home translate outside. You know, you can't separate the two. You can't say our child is well-mannered in their home, but when they go outside, they're not well-mannered. It's very slow. It's not possible. You have to teach that in the home. Train up the child in the way it should go, and when he's grown, you know, you can prove it. You know? So kids have an innate desire to connect with other kids. You find them connecting. I think I'll give an example of our son. He's one of who can be very shy and all that, but you just leave him there and they'll figure it out. because he wants to play. The thing that he wants is to relate to kids of his age. He doesn't sit down with adults and it's an innate thing. So So
it's hard work.
Yes, it's hard work. But teaching them to relate to people, you have to teach it in the home. It's not the school that you teach it anyway. You know? And because as parents also we're very defensive about anyone else disciplining our children actually, if we are honest with ourselves.
Yep.
So we teach that to our children in the home, and even if we send them out to school, we want the PLN. That's why the first thing a parent will say, this is not what I teach you at home, you know? Because you expect that the behavior from the home will present it. So I feel like how to relate to other people is taught within the home. Not in the home school, but in the home. And then there's an innate desire for children to connect. And so they're able to connect at that level. But we supervise them because there's a certain level of self-awareness that's not there. Like, they don't understand that if I pick up this thing, and they don't understand empathy. So we supervise them. Desire to connect is already there. So, yeah, that's about homeschooling.
How long are we going for now?
We're almost winding up, definitely. we've done a good 2 hours.
So still not the Joe Rogan.
No, we're not there yet. We're not at 3 hours. And it's our very first rodeo, so. You're enjoying this, aren't you?
Sure, I do. You didn't have to put gun to my head to jump on.
Yeah, for sure. And this podcast was something that you contributed to starting. I mean, when I first mentioned it. In fact, I have a story about the podcast that you probably do not remember.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I remember when we met, I think I was not. Actually, I had an idea of what podcasts were, but had no interest in them whatsoever. And I remember the first podcast you sent to me, and you sent it on, I think you sent it on Google, or you sent it to me specifically, and you say, you should have listened to this, and then, you know, that time you were on iPhone, so you sent me an actual Apple podcast, and it was Michael Rapaport.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And I listened to that podcast. That was my first, like, sitting down and listening to that. What's this guy talking about? I mean, you know, Michael is not the cleanest of guys, and I want to listen to the cleanest of you. But I was like, I know Michael, and he was talking about the NBA, but other stuff. But I listened to that, like, oh, this makes sense. And then you continued sending me a couple of them, actually. Some of them I would listen to, some of them I would just stop by, like, I'm going to listen. But then because you were going to ask me, I had to listen to them. Because I was not going to look you in the face and say, yeah, I listened to it, because you're going to ask me something about it. Then it moved from any podcast into about permaculture and that sort of stuff. And I was kind of hooked onto it. And at the time, I had no idea I was going to ever start a podcast. But that's how I got introduced to podcasting. And now, along the way, I figured, you know what? I'm a storyteller. And I could start something else.
And you know I'm not the one to tell someone, no, don't do it.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not. You go for it.
Yeah. And so we went through some names in it. And because I was at the same time, my brother and I were thinking about starting a podcast called Drop Balls, where we'd just goof about stuff, you know what I mean? And then I'm like, well, I want to do something that I could share on. And then we went through a couple of names, we posted them to you, and then we spoke through. So now, what did you think of it the first time I know you're going to say, do it, but what did you really think about it?
No, I was all in. I was probably more excited than you were.
Yeah,
and because going back to the farming context,
right.
I'd love to do more of a, what's what's it called, more of chronology or more of a archival documentation of the progress and the experiences, and hopefully inspire people, and hope that people would learn something along the way. So I'd love to do it myself, but I'm not at that point in my life.
Yeah, what you need is to keep all the stuff. Then it comes to you for you. It's like you've got Instagram stuff going, and you've got all this. It doesn't matter whether it's a business plan, it's whatever you have relating to your story. Those are pointers that you can come back to. Well, I'm pretty, detailed in the way that I keep stuff, like I'm a record keeper, but all those points, just those moments, you can always come back to them. Because
It stays there. So I think from the book, that's the reason why I try to keep the Instagram account alive. So there's some record of the journey.
Yeah.
Even if I need to reflect on where I was, it's much easier to scroll through it than going through the pictures and whatnot. And like the other day, I was telling you, I was using it to explain certain things to the farm workers.
Yeah.
So it comes handy. So to answer your question, I'm so glad you did it initially. I think I was more excited than you. I'm really glad you're doing it, and it's impressive. I told you from the start, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your, you know what. The sound quality, you shouldn't worry about it, it's just fine. So hopefully people are enjoying it.
Yeah. What did you think of when I posted the first episode, the journey of an imposter?
I think it was dark. I thought, like, yo, bro, this was a little too dark for my liking.
I tell you what, the journey of an imposter is the highest downloaded podcast to this day. It gets a download every single day.
Awesome.
And I listened to it like a couple of times, if I'm honest.
Okay.
And I
listened to it twice.
Right. I think for me, it was about setting the tone that I'm serious about being upfront with my listeners. Like, if my story is going to be powerful, like just like your story, like I would like to be part of. Like, hey, you cannot book this. We use this as a not. Like, I would love to be part of telling your story, because the story is such a powerful thing. Like, when you tell your journey, there's things that people want to hear and people who are willing to be helped. I didn't want to shortchange anybody by keeping out. Obviously, I'm not going to be detailed about certain private things because of my family, but I wanted to give a real picture and a real understanding. And when I set the tone, and I felt it like, okay, this was real for me. And from there, I think it made it easier for me. Like, I was thinking, I don't want to tell people that life is hard and give them all gloomy. There's enough gloominess in there, but I wanted to say, like, life is about having gloominess, but
makes you appreciate the good times,
right,
much more,
right,
once you experience the downs. So,
yeah. But that was the journey of an imposter. And what would you say was one of your favorite bits, like from all the podcasts? Which one? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I've talked about, like, but resonated the most with you.
No, I just genuinely appreciate your openness to just go out there and sort of spill the beans.
Yeah.
Because even as we were getting to know each other, I'm a firm believer of just, if you got something to say, you just say it, and if the person is able to process it, they take it for what it is,
yeah,
and if it resonates with them,
yeah,
they roll with you. You have a friend for life. If they don't resonate with it, it's not meant to be.
Mm.
Simple as that. I try to use very, very little filters.
Yeah.
I usually swear a lot, so it takes a lot for me to not swear for 2 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours without swearing, it's a lot for me. So I just appreciate the candidness of just being open and just put it all out there.
Yeah. And for me, this is the point where I say I appreciate my wife. Like she allowed me to be able to put all this out. And I mean, obviously, I have a show planned with her to like give her side of the coin, but obviously, it's such a great source of strength for me to be able to stand out there and say, okay, this is what went through. It's not just about me, but her along on the ride and on the journey and being able to say, she's a very private person, I know, but she being, like, she's one of the people who's looking out to listen to the episodes, and she's allowed me to be able to express this and tell our story, and I said, I don't know who, but someone is going to be helped somehow from this podcast, and I may never even meet them, but somehow, just like, it helps somebody, so,
okay.
if I can get to that point in the journey, then I'm definitely happy with it.
But let me ask you this, do you find it therapeutic?
It is cathartic.
I'm sure it's for me, like if I have a burden or something worries me, I feel so much better once I let it out.
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer of if you just keep on bottling it, it will come out eventually, probably at the wrong time.
Yeah.
So
in a way you didn't want it.
Yeah.
So for sure it's pathetic because I like I said, I've mentioned before in my podcast, like I used to write a lot. Nowadays I still write, you know, I've got a notebook, it's not on my phone, I just need to transfer it somewhere somehow. I write a lot, and I used to keep a diary back in the day.
No, nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, I used to keep a diary of all this, but and then I was like, look, I'm gonna write this stuff one day. A way of me dealing with stuff, like I can't let it out because I'm an introvert by nature, and then I saw it right. And when I met my wife, who is like one of those people who like shoots at you straight, I started learning to be able to express myself, you know, and I developed, I still wrote, like, but the whole process of speaking this out through a microphone to somebody is helping me as much as it's helping somebody else, even more so. Like, why not say this out in a way that helps somebody as I'm processing things? It's my own process. I got nothing to get out. Like, you know, my journey is still ongoing. It never ended, you know. Like, you know? But the one thing that I appreciate about life is that I just can't be a person who hides behind a certain facade, like, look, I'm gonna hide my struggles so that people don't think that thing of me. I think I left that life a long time ago, you know. What you see is what you get, so it helps me. Like, this podcast is therapeutic for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I just want to say one more thing about the podcast. Like you said, I used to write a lot. I'm still, like you almost say it like an excuse that I still write. Like each coin has two sides. So I feel like podcasts have robbed me of reading.
Yeah.
It's like I used to try to read a lot. And I feel guilty of not reading enough. nowadays. It's like you are busy with raising the boy, you are busy doing stuff at home, doing stuff at the farm. So podcast is a natural way of multitasking.
Yeah.
As you can do a lot of things and still listen to the
yeah.
podcast and not miss out on anything, but you can't really do some meaningful work and read at the same time.
Yeah.
So I miss reading, so but I feel like podcasts have really robbed me of reading as much as I used to. But I think that's also the age we're living in. You can access a lot of information
right.
online, whether it's YouTube or other video sites. So any information, whether it's on farming or cooking or baking or whatever you choose to do, it's out there. So you don't necessarily have to go to a library or spend days reading a book. You can watch a YouTube video or a couple of them on 2x speed and have just about the same substance. So,
because it's information.
That's where we are. That's where we are, I suppose, in 2022.
Right. It's information, and the book is information. So we just the media and the way that we're getting the information has transformed. If you can have time to read a book, you still read a book. But I think for me, we should be at peace with being able to get that information as we're getting it right now. And the podcast is an effective way right now of getting that information from different sources. And I think the one thing I like about podcasts as well is you can have the same piece of information from different people in different ways and be able to get, you know, similar stuff like you and I are digging into research and stuff, but you can, the same thing, you can get it from different angles and then finally make your own.
You can do a lot of reading between the lines from different perspectives.
So, it's a good way. And I think I make it a habit like nowadays to just listen to a podcast of someone else or something else, something different. Luckily, I've got you to send me all these different links.
I'm a heavy user.
so that's that. Well, bro, like, what's next for you, man? Like, as we close this show today, what's next for you?
Who knows? Hopefully, I'll do a decent job of raising this boy of ours.
Yeah.
So that still remains the number one priority. And just work towards building up the farm to get it as close as possible to the business plan that you're well aware of.
Yeah.
So that's the two main goals. Number one priority is our son. The priority 1B is the farm.
Awesome.
What's next for you? Next podcast?
When are we doing the next podcast? Part 2?
Whenever you're ready. But I spent about 12 hours on the road, so I'm a bit mentally incapacitated. So I think it's about time for you to close this.
Yeah, definitely. I really appreciate you being
here. Anytime, brother.
It's been fun. Let's do this again, bro.
Not best for beginner.
Good stuff. Ciao.
This was such an amazing discussion with Pete, and a lot of things from our lives, both our lives, came out from this discussion, and we got to talk a little bit more about Zambia as well. You heard Lusaka, you heard Solwezi. Zambia is part of an African society and an African continent that has a rich culture, and I'm proud to call it my home. And there's so much unique stuff that I've experienced in this country, and I'm glad that other people like Pete are welcome here and able to experience this amazing, amazing culture. But generally, from this conversation, we got to revisit parts of our lives in the past 5 years that really spoke to our experiences as regular people. And I believe that this is also something that resonates with somebody out there, and I hope you enjoyed. Because our sound quality wasn't quite to our expectations, we decided to give you, our listeners, a perfect gift, and look out for it in the next couple of weeks. Thanks for listening, and this is the Pretender Podcast. I'm out.